Okay, we call the meeting to order. Any citizen comments? Citizen comments? Request from the chairperson. I just want to just make a, say a couple of things. I did reach to some of our legislators in Madison, and I did tentatively set up appointments for them to come and see us. Next month, Senator Weingarten is going to be here. Then August, Representative Peter Barker. And in September, Samantha Kirkman. And I will keep on going down the line asking the other people, so hopefully we can have all of them. That's all I have for right now. Any reports from the committee members? And I guess we don't, we didn't have a roll call, did we? Did we miss that?
Oh, you held up the roll call just so you'd be on time.
Yeah, whatever.
Who's where?
Okay.
So, he's in the bathroom, so slide it one way or the other.
No, I don't think anyone's in there.
There you go.
Okay. Andy Berg.
Here.
John Franco.
Here.
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
David Holman.
Present.
Mark Nordigan.
Here.
Zach Rodriguez.
Here.
Gabe Newto.
Here.
And then for youth and governance, we have Catherine Bogdan.
Here.
And then Elizabeth Van Kammen is not here tonight.
And she had called, or she sent an email.
She's excused, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, communications?
None.
And then we need the approval of the May 15 minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Franco, second by Supervisor Frederick. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Yes. Okay, now I guess we're going to wait a few minutes until the chat's back here.
Okay. I do have a...
It's going to be a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
I got one.
They sent an updated one today.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
Thank you.
You can also take the next one.
Which one?
The one that's going to have a lot of discussion.
We could. I might have some discussion, though. So.
You're not going anywhere.
Well,
just
saying.
Yeah.
You got a vehicle.
Well, what time's first pitch? Is it 7?
Oh, I don't
know. So.
7.
Joe, I only have one.
So, how are we doing?
Okay, well, we're ready
we're
to have your presentation.
I couldn't get on there because I didn't know how to work your Mac.
I can show you how it works online because you have to.
Okay.
Hold
on, let me see if we can.
Otherwise, Chelsea sent me the presentation today.
Yeah.
Can run it off of mine.
No, that'd be fine. Let's try it again. Can we try this one?
You have to not install, but you have to accept the application on your computer first.
No, I never said that.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Should we do it on yours?
Yeah.
Yours. Okay, I'm gonna pass some of these here around the table. Make sure we got enough here. There you go. Thank you. And I come over here and make sure you need one.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And then we can come back here. Just one.
It's connecting.
Okay, how are we looking? Is it?
It's connecting right now.
It's connecting, it's good. Yes. Okay, great. Hey, I'm Dan Barr from Wisconsin Counties Association, Government Relations, one of four Government Relations Directors. Myself, Marcy Rainbolt, she does Courts and Corrections and County Order Personnel. Sarah Dietrich Castor, she does Health and Human Services. Kyle Christensen, Tax and Finance, and almost everything. He's the head lobbyist, and then myself. And so it's a great team. And then Mark Chelsea Fibert, who some of you have had contact with. She's the government affairs assistant for WCA. So, oh, sorry. Okay.
That's good.
And so just a little background on WCA. I'll give you a little background. It's great to be back. You know, I was here back in March, and we had some good discussions, had a good discussion with your executive, and Jenny, the chief of staff, just really good discussions with them, and with all of you, with this committee, and also your county board briefly, so, but it's good to be back. And so, much has happened since then. The legislature's adjourned. We've had some special elections. We'll talk about the upcoming, well, you know, right now we're in a holding pattern until the elections. We'll see what things look like at the elections. After that, but we'll talk a little bit about that going forward here later in the slides. So WCA was created back in 1935, before my time, and Wisconsin Statute 59.52_22 authorizes counties to join an association committed to, quote, the protection of county interest and the furtherance of a better county government. That's us. That's what we try and do. And so we try to be a resource for you, help you, serve you as members any way we can, whether it's information, whether it's me coming to your county board or your committees, whatever it might be, we try and do that. So that's the goal. What are some of the services provided by WCA? Well, I'm part of the lobbying team. Lobbying team, we always put together a legislative agenda, platform. We have four lobbyists, as I mentioned. We have a cap watch that you get in your email. You've probably seen those come in with updates on what's going on. Budget webinars, webinars on various topics of interest for all you. And that's just to keep you informed of what the legislature's doing. We feel at WCA that our greatest strength and our greatest resource is our membership. It's all you. When I come and I'm in Kenosha County and we want to talk to Samantha Kirkman or we want to talk to Robin Voss and his district runs into these counties, he's fine talking to me, but the best person to interact with him is his constituents. Whether that be Samantha, whether it's Robin, whether that's Peter Barca, regardless, Bob Wirch or Van Wingard, the best resources are our membership. And so we want to get you guys as much as we can in front of the legislators, whoever's elected, to try and make the case for county government. We are nonpartisan, we're a team. We try to make sure it's all about the counties, all about the members. We got some counties that are very strongly Democratic, progressive, some very conservative counties, some middle-of-the-road counties like Kenosha, and that's okay. We were happy to deal with all of them. We try to balance things out. There's a place for everybody. We're a nonpartisan organization. We have various publications, the Wisconsin Counties Association magazine, which you get monthly. You've probably seen that. I've been featured. There's a picture of me in some of the articles that have been written where I look much younger. And so check that out. And Mitch Schlimmer. And at one time that was me. There's also Wisconsin County Officials Handbook, which I think is very beneficial. It's got all the directory of all the counties. You want to talk to some of your colleagues in other counties, want to get a hold of the Milwaukee County Executive's Chief of Staff, it's all there. Elected officials, you want to get a hold of a supervisor in Manitowoc County, the county board chair in Sheboygan County, you can do that. It's in the handbook, so that's a great resource as well. Also, Wisconsin County Government History, Services, and Funding, we have all that is available too. We have a booklet on that. WCA News, which we send out on a regular basis. We do lots of outreach. That's me. I do outreach. We'll go to the next slide, I think. You can go to our website for information. We got a Facebook and Twitter page as well if you're into social media. Our social media isn't as exciting as some, but we try to keep, again, use it as a resource to keep our members updated. The website's really good. It's a really good website. I encourage you checking it out. We have our annual conference. We got our legislative exchange. Those are our two big events, our legislative exchange, which centers around the government affairs team. Our annual conference features a lot of the board of directors, our committee, our membership. We have lots of educational seminars and webinars, of course. A county officials workshop for people, all you, who if you're interested in various topics, wherever the topic might be, highways, I do a lot of highway stuff, health and human services. We'll have webinars and seminars with topics. We also offered all the members via email the Wheeler Report and WIS Politics. They have daily updates on what's going on with the legislature, what's going on with elections. WIS Politics is a good job. They have a Friday recap of what happened, a political stock report. If you're following politics carefully, that's stuff you can follow. It's always gossip and tidbits in there, but it's good stuff if you're interested. What are counties? We have which we can bring to you, a CD that you can show it, talks about what counties do, the services we provide, things like that. And also, the great thing about WCA is we also have some other entities that help the association really be self-sustaining and not rely on dues. We have not had an increase in dues since 2002, since Mark O'Connell has been the executive director, and we won't have one anytime in the near future, if ever, in my lifetime. And part of the reason for that is because we have entities that really help the association generate revenue in the private sector. One of those is the WCA services. You see that up there. They have various products and services that we can provide to the members. It's optional, of course, for the members to use those WCA endorsed products. But it's groups from Microsoft, it's various groups such as Enterprise Rent-A-Car, their fleet that they try to sell to highway departments. It's Motorola is another example of one of the WCA service endorsed products. And so one of the things we do is we help them navigate the counties when they want to reach out. We also help them with legislative goals in the legislature, with some of the state agencies, things like that. And it's all separate from WCA. It's WCA services. When I do any work for the service corporation, I have to fill out a separate sheet and log time, and it's a separate thing. It's for profit, but that helps us generate a lot of revenue. It's actually it's a very good thing. Been generating a lot of revenue with the way the economy's been going, so that's good news for WCA. Also, Wisconsin County Mutual Insurance Corporation. I don't know if Kenosha County is a member or not, doesn't matter, but we offer insurance to the members. WCA Trust, again, more insurance-related issues for liability. County Mutual, GHT, good services that we provide, and they help the association generate revenue. Ultimately, WCA, the Wisconsin Counties Association, is the administrator for those entities. So those are some of the things that we have going outside of WCA. Now, keep in mind that WCA's first and foremost and primary function is to further the interest of county government. We only exist because of the counties, because we're a counties association. So it's important to keep that in mind. Any questions so far? Okay.
The station, the TV station, channels 372, correct? Isn't that WIS Politics?
Is that so? That might be a local cable access station.
Yeah,
is that right?
It is. Yeah, but it
we might have
broadcasts all sorts of state. Wisconsin Eye. Yeah, that's not linked to. That has nothing to do with.
We are a sponsor of theirs, so you might see some of our ads.
Okay.
So we do sponsor. We were pretty involved in supporting them and sponsoring them because it's important. We want our people to have access to follow committee hearings, to follow bills. We ask our members to keep up to speed whenever they can, so we think it's good stuff. So if you are new or you're looking to get involved, there are many ways to get involved. The first I would recommend is to be involved with the WCA steering committee. We have a steering committee for every issue area that WCA lobbies on. And so I staff the Transportation and Public Works Steering Committee. I also staff the Agriculture, Environment, and Land Use Steering Committee. But we also have Courts and Corrections, County Oregon Personnel has a steering committee, Health and Human Services, Tax and Finance. Those are all WCA steering committees related to our issue areas. And what they do is they make recommendations. They really vet issues, get into the weeds on issues, and then they make recommendations to the WCA Board of Directors on perhaps what the position of the association should be on particular issues that come forth down the pike. So steering committees are a good way to be involved, make a lot of important decisions. Also, the CAP team, the County Ambassador Program, is when we have key issues and the legislature's going, we'll have a CAP team day where members will come down to Madison, we'll have breakfast, we'll update our members on the issues, and then they'll head to the Capitol to make appointments with their legislators, and they'll discuss the issues from a county perspective. It's really a good way to get a lot of people involved. A lot of times we get 50 or 60 people. They come, we brief them on the issues, we provide some breakfast, they go to the Capitol, they meet with their state senator, the state assembly people, come back, we have a lunch, we debrief, It's a good day, pretty active, good stuff. I mentioned the seminars and webinars, just making sure people are up to date on all the issues. And when you get a hot topic, I know last time I was here, the Lincoln Hills related issues, and juvenile corrections is a big thing. You'll see seminars and webinars on things like that as things change, as counties are charged with providing more services. As we interact with state government, we want to keep our members up to date and let them know how they can best function or give them best practices, things like that. Also, always encourage you to attend the WCA Annual Conference and the Legislative Exchange. Annual Conference is in September this year, and the Legislative Exchange is in February. Lots of opportunity to make it to that, lots of good speakers, lots of fun. You know, this year it's in La Crosse, Wisconsin, so other side of the state. Good opportunity to get to, it's right downtown La Crosse, right by the Mississippi River, so it's a good opportunity to see another part of the state in a great downtown area, lots of good restaurants and bars, and so I would suggest.
You're really pushing the having fun business here.
You know, we work hard, but we play hard, we have fun, so that's what we do. Yes, sir.
Do you have the date for February when
the Legislative Exchange?
Yeah.
You know, I'll get it for you. I'm off the top of my head, I don't know, but I can get that for you. It's not a problem at all. So just let's get to the legislative review. We'll have a brief review of the legislative session. And so I'm going to have a chart that comes up, and you're going to see the pyramids. And you can see some of these issues here in the biennial budget report there. Basically, you see Next Gen 911. This goes back all the way to 2009 when the state was in a deep recession. We lost a lot of 911 money. That money was taken away and put into the general fund, I think, to keep the schools running the lights on at the time. Times were pretty tough back then, 2009-11 budget. And so since that money's been gone, we've said, hey, you know, it was intended for 911, let's start to put it back. And we hadn't been successful until recently, until this past year. Next Gen 911, the budget did provide $7 million annually beginning in 2019 for the creation of the statewide 911 network. And, you know, you talk about how different municipalities or counties have different facilities in terms of handling 911. You know, we're trying to regionalize it statewide, and this is the start of that. We want to get back to, you know, making sure when you pay your, and again, not really, it's not an issue that I lobby in, but I heard so much about it, I can talk about it. When you make a 911 call from your cell phone, you know, there's a payment that goes into that. We want to see that stay to provide services for 911, your call centers, your PSAPs, as opposed to going out to the general fund and funding, you know, some other random program. We think it's the appropriate use of money when people call 911, have a 25-cent charge on their phone bill, is to go for 911. It seems fit to reason. Child welfare funding. Now, Sarah has long worked hard on this. Some of this stuff has been worked on for a long time. I can tell you, when I get to my stuff, I'll tell you, I've worked on this how many years? And then it's good to see it, a lot of it come to fruition. But child welfare funding, the budget did provide an additional $5 million annually starting in January of 18 for child welfare services, and also $3 million for the expansion of in-home safety services programs statewide over the biennium, okay, in the 17-19 budget. So again, good stuff. Sarah, if she were here, Sarah Dietrich-Kastorf, our Health and Human Services lobbyist, would tell you it's something she's worked on for a long, long time, getting some additional money. This is the time. And so that's good news. And then you'll see the third bullet point down there relates to county transportation funding. And there was a lot that we looked for. And there's sort of two prongs when we talk about transportation funding for counties. There's our own programs. So our own programs like general transportation aids, routine maintenance agreements with the state for the maintenance we provide on the state system, LRIP, in our case CHIP, County Highway Improvement Program. LRIP is the state component of the local road improvement program. Your component of that is CHIP. Towns are TRIP, Town Road Improvement Program. Cities are MISIP, Municipal Street Improvement Program. We got significant increases in those programs. LRIP hasn't had an increase since 1998. We got a 13% increase in GTA, General Transportation Aids. We got another increase. We've had several increases in the routine maintenance agreements we do. There's been increases in the local bridge improvement program to make sure our bridges are up to par and that we don't have to post them. These are all things that were addressed for local transportation funding. And the governor and some in the legislature made it a priority to fund local transportation. However, the second prong, and so there's two prongs to transportation when you think about transportation funding. There's our programs, the county programs, and then there's the big picture transportation fund. We were very successful on our programs. GTA, LRIP, Bridge, you name it. Okay, when it comes to the big picture stabilization and reclamation of the segregated transportation fund and all the programs it supports, not so good. It's a big political issue right now. You'll hear about it in the election season, but essentially the majors and the Southeast mega projects programs were cut. Several projects around the state were delayed. There's talk about different portions of the zoo interchange and how that's all going to come together. There's been some delays. Of course, our position, along with a lot of our coalition members, we like to see the increases in our individual programs, but in order to sustain that and keep that going, we're going to need long-term stabilization and reclamation of the segregated transportation fund and all the programs it supports. We advocate for a revenue source for that, so that you're going to hear about as the election cycle gets going. You're going to hear from different politicians who are running for various offices related to the state about that and different positions on that. And so the governor does not support new revenue, new taxes. He wants to be low tax. He's got many in his own party who disagree with him, particularly Speaker Voss and the Assembly Republicans. They would like to see some sort of resolution regarding long-term transportation funding. Senate Republicans are sort of in a holding pattern, waiting to see if the governor proposes some sort of solution. I think they'd go along with the governor generally. And the Democrats, I think they support additional transportation funding. They may be more along the lines of where the Assembly Republicans are. I haven't seen specifics, and there's 15 candidates running for governor, and I don't know where they all are at. But once the field gets narrowed down, we'll have a better idea. And you can always ask me, I can always research specific candidates, what their position is. But, you know, that'll be all out there as you have more candidate debates, the election gets closer. So that's sort of the transportation piece. And all those of that triangle, child welfare, transportation, next gen 911, and the joint agency statute, which I talked about last time I was here, allowing counties to have a joint highway committee and combine forces and operate in an efficient manner where let's say you got a health department that want to provide services. Two counties want to work together and combine their health department, or two counties want to have one highway commissioner and they want to have a joint highway department. The joint agency statute tweak in the budget allows you to do that. That's something we've been asking for a while. So we've had success in all these areas here in the past budget cycle. The transportation was big. GTA, the increase, 13%, big increase. Haven't had an increase like that in a long time. This is good news. Child welfare funding, 911, all stuff. 911, you talked to Marcy on our government affairs team. She's been working on it for a long time since she started. So this is all stuff we've been waiting a long time for. So some big wins, no doubt. You know, good stuff from the government affairs team. Any questions on any of those topics thus far?
What's the total biennial budget, about $77 billion? Is that the number?
I think that's right. I mean, I'd say that's approximate.
That number sticks in my head for some reason.
Yeah, I think I'd say it's approximately that amount. Don't quote me on that. Other highlights. This is all stuff I worked on, so I'm very excited about some of the successes. If you go to some of the pages, you'll see we've got county conservation funding. This is funding for staffing, county conservation staffing and cost sharing grants. For your conservation departments, the state helps us with that. We provide conservation services, groundwater quality, keep tabs on the water, keep tabs on the groundwater, ensure that there's limited runoff. We try to avoid pollution in our groundwater and keep the environment healthy at the county level. And that's sort of a partnership between the ag community and between the counties, having our conservation individuals go out and distribute cost-sharing grants with farmers and landowners so that they implement best practices. We were able to get another $900,000, a base increase in county conservation staffing and cost-sharing grants. And in a lot of conservation departments, and this is a bigger county, so I think it's pretty relevant. Let's say you have three employees, the state has a funding mechanism or system by which they'll fund fully the first employee, they'll fund half of the second employee, and then they'll fund maybe a fourth or 25% of the third employee. So we do get some support, and having this additional funding helps us out. We're at $9 million statewide annually to assist counties with conservation, staffing, and cost-sharing grants. So that's good news. Also, CVSO grants, we asked for some flexibility in terms of how the county veteran service officers spend those grants and what they're able to purchase. The previous administration or secretary, administration secretary, Secretary Skokos was very strict about how that money be spent. We had asked for some statutory language just to provide some guidelines, but also to allow the counties to have some flexibility to ensure that the best interest of the veterans is being carried out. Those are services that are regional that we provide at the county level, and we were successful in getting the language changes we sought and making sure that the state regulations in terms of the CVSO grants are less regulatory and less burdensome, and so that's good news for the counties. In addition, there was some additional money for invasive species. I think it was a one-time grant of about $500,000. And this is for aquatic invasive species. I had been working with an individual from Calumet County. She was an invasive species coordinator, and she had suggested that maybe in the next budget we look at terrestrial or ground invasive species. This is for, this $500,000 is for aquatic, but she's saying you gotta get on the land because there's more and more stuff coming, so invasive species. So we'll look at that. We'll talk to, I talked to DADCAP, the Department of Agriculture, about looking at terrestrial. I sent them some information. We got a great relationship with Sheila Harsdorf, who was a state senator, who is now the agricultural secretary. And so I think we can make some progress on that in the next legislative session. Also, and I don't want to lose my voice. Any questions so far? I'll let you guys talk if you have any questions. No? Okay, the federal SWAP program. So the federal government has a program which is known as the STP, or the Surface Transportation Program, okay? That is, those are federal, they're sort of like block grants. And what the federal government does is they said, hey, Wisconsin, we're gonna send you X number of dollars, and this is money for your locals to improve the roads. It's similar to the LRIP program, but it's federal money. Attached to that federal money, however, are more burdensome regulations related to the EPA, not the DNR, environment, permitting, Davis-Bacon, labor standards, all that sort of stuff. And so what we did is we said, well, we got a bunch of state money stuck into a lot of the big projects that already have federal money attached. When you have a project that has federal dollars attached, even if it's only a dollar, you have to comply with all the federal regulations. And that means more onerous and more cumbersome permitting. It means the Davis-Bacon standards. It means the EPA standards, the whole thing. And so our guys have said, it makes sense to have the federal money attached to something like the Zoo Interchange, which is a very large, cumbersome project. You got people working in unsafe conditions. You have environmental conditions that need to be more carefully considered. You got labor standards that probably should be a little more strict, as opposed to someone who's just repaving a county road.
Yeah.
You know, that's a simple project. We probably don't need to have very strict federal guidelines on that. So what we said is swap the state money. There's lots of state money in these bigger mega projects. Swap some of the state money out of those mega projects and swap the federal money into the mega projects and take the state money, put it into our smaller projects so that we can capture the efficiencies that we get when we use the state money versus the federal. That's what the swap is. We had language included. Joint Finance has begun the process of doing this to help us out. When we get our STP dollars, the state can administer it, we can move it around, and we can capture those efficiencies. That's what the swap seeks to do. Does that make sense?
Good idea.
And I came up with this concept back, and this is something I pushed for several, since 2013. It was actually Kansas was doing this. And Kansas was doing a buyout where they have their federal programs, they have their big projects with federal money attached, and they have their small local projects, and they have their STP money. They take 95 cents on the dollar from the state, and they'd swap it out. They gave them more money to get rid of the federal because they capture that much efficiency. Because essentially, it's estimated that if you use the state money versus the federal money, that on cost delivery, which is about 30% of a project, you got to deliver the cost, you got to do all the paperwork, you have to do all the regulations, you got to all the compliance with EPA. That's about 30% of the cost of a project. And we have estimated that you can potentially save up to 35% of cost, 35% on the delivery cost. So 35% of about one third of the project is what you can save. So is it the end all be all? Is it going to solve our transportation funding problem? No, but it's a good way for us to make things easier, to do business, to save as much money as possible. Yes, and stretch our dollars further, you bet. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what we've done with the swap. Okay. So we have some other things in here. Let me make sure I get to them. The cost standard. Raise your hand if you know about the cost standard. No? Okay. So let me explain it in simple terms. Marcy worked on this. Basically, when you as a county, you know, if you, and this can be controversial at times, and some of the unions don't like it, but let's say I'm a snowplow driver, okay? I get a DUI, because this is a real-life example. I get a DUI, okay? I guess I'm not really good. If I can't use my driver's license, I can't really drive the
You're talking about DUI, private driving, not while you're plowing snow.
Yeah, private driving. Well, maybe plowing snow. That wouldn't go over too well, I guess. I don't know. Depends what your rules are.
We have other issues
are.
If that's the case. So just yeah. Speak to the first one.
Okay, so if I get a DUI, so I have no license. I'm out of business for 6 months. Tony says, well, I don't know what we're going to do with you. You're a snowplow driver, you know. So, well, we got to fire the guy. I mean, you got to let him go, or at least he's laid off until he can drive, right? So you could make the argument, well, you don't really have cause, you know, there's nothing wrong with his job performance, you know, he just drove drunk. Maybe he was off work, like you said. And so you get into lawsuits, you get into people making claims. This clears all that up. We have probable cause to fire these people under these circumstances with the cause standard. It really, you know, we don't have to sit there and litigate every single issue. Someone doesn't have a driver's license, we, you know, can't really, and they're supposed to be a snowplow driver. I mean, it puts us in a bad position. You know, taxpayers not getting the best bang for the buck on that, so we had the statutes adjusted to address something like that. Newspaper notices. If you go back, back in the old days, you know, people, you know, and they still do to a certain degree, get a lot of information via the newspaper. And particularly when it comes to open records and public meetings, this meeting itself maybe was in the Kenosha Daily News, I don't know. But what we said is, hey, in a lot of cases, a lot of this stuff can be done via the internet. You know, you shouldn't require the counties to publish every single meeting in the newspaper. You know, you can, you know, and what you can do is put in the newspaper, say, hey, county meetings are posted online at the following website. All that's available at the library, things like that. That's a good way for us to save money, because every time we publish something in the newspaper for meetings, every time there's a meeting they require a notice, it costs us money. We've got to pay the newspaper for the space. Newspapers were opposed to this. They had lobbyists working against it. We're for it. We think it makes sense. It helps local governments save money. This personal property tax, you may have heard of that. The tax, if you own a business, the tax on various items, various products in your within your business. The state established a separate sum appropriation to reimburse the local governments for what they're going to lose for the repeal of the personal property tax. So that helps businesses in the state, with the economy being good, was able to produce a sum appropriation to reimburse us for what we lost with the repeal of the personal property tax. We were good so long as they made us whole, which they did, and so that went pretty well. Also, TAD funding. How many of you are familiar with TAD funding? Let me go through here. No?
Yeah.
Yeah? You want to talk about what TAD funding is?
You can if you want to.
What's that?
You go right ahead.
Well,
you drove all this way. I don't see why you should.
Okay, I gotta.
They don't want to hear me lecture on TAD. We've already done that twice.
Well, you go ahead and tell them about TAD, and then I'll talk about what they did.
I will defer to the experts there. You came so far. I really don't want to cheat you out of the experience.
Fair enough. Here it is. Treatment Alternatives and Diversion Program. Budget provides $250,000 annually for TAD during the 2017 and 19 biennium. These are TAD grants to counties that do not currently receive a grant under the TAD program. These PR funds will be transferred from the Attorney General's Office Discretionary Settlement Fund to counties, provide grants to counties for key treatment alternatives and diversion in the 2017-19 budget. So, positive stuff. I did not work on this. I think Sarah, our lobbyist, worked on it. Or pardon me. Yeah, it was Sarah that did. So that is the latest with Tad. I thought I had everything covered and I was prepared, but Tad jumped out at me. So, okay. So items we're still looking to do, to make progress on. Because there's always more to do. Despite a lot of successes in this past legislative session, there's still more left on the table. Things that we need to work out. Deals need to be made, and progress needs to be made as well. The dark store loophole. Raise your hand if you've heard about this issue. One of our top issues. We had a bill to do this. Bipartisan support for the dark store loophole. Essentially, it's like if a Walgreens or Walmart comes to town and their building gets assessed at $3 million, and they say, you know, we can't pay $3 million. We're contesting this assessment because really we can only ever sell this Walgreens for $2 million. Because no one else is going to use it as a drugstore. So it's really only worth $2 million to us, because that's what we can sell it for. Our position is, well, you built it. It's your problem, not ours. But they challenge the stuff in court. Oftentimes the courts rule in favor of Walgreens or Walmarts, and who ends up paying the difference is the local taxpayer. So we've got a bill to do away with that loophole, to stop these frivolous lawsuits, although in these challenges of assessment. Now, maybe they're not so frivolous when the courts rule in their favor. So we need to do something. So we got the dark store loophole legislation to do away with this practice of suing. Yes?
I think Supervisor Devin.
One question. I know when this cropped up, there seemed to be quite a bit of outrage from a variety of corners across the state. And I was kind of curious as to why there was no further momentum. Like, why did, if there's a bill drafted, why did this not make its way across the finish line? Why is this still left outstanding? Why is there no special session? With the amount of outrage from all corners of the state that this issue seems to have garnered?
Well, fair question. So I think there was definitely majority support in the legislature. I'd say virtually all the Democrats supported it. The vast majority of the Republicans did. But essentially, you did have Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC, very conservative group, and their members were very opposed to the dark store loophole changes. They felt it was an additional tax. And even though this was very popular legislation, they got with the leadership on the Republican side and said, you know, really fought to hold this up. And we were told, as is the case on most legislation, it takes, you got 33 members of the state Senate. It really came down to the state Senate. There's 33 members. To pass any particular bill, you need 17 members to pass it officially. So I could pass anything with 17 members. Doesn't matter who they are or what party. 17, but the Majority Leader Fitzgerald has a policy that you have to have 17 Republicans, okay, to pass a bill. 17 Republicans. The Democrats may vote for it, and so you'll end up with 30 votes. What the deal was is when the session started, there was 20 Republicans. There were four that were either opposed to the changes we were seeking or on the fence. Anyway, there's three. But then what happened is Sheila Harstrup got appointed to Ag Secretary. Well, then her seat came open. Her seat flipped to the Democrats. So then we were lost that, and then we're down four. And there was only 19 Republicans to work from because the Democrats picked up the seat. So, you know, then we had Senator, I think it was Senator Craig. Senator Strobel was an author, by the way. He's a great credit, very conservative legislator from Washington County. But we had Craig, Senator Buchner, who's running for U.S. Senate. I think she was nervous about pissing off WMC. There was one more, but anyway, we just didn't get to 17 Republicans supporting the bill. And thus, the Assembly was willing to move the bill, the Republican leadership in the Assembly. But essentially, because the Senate didn't move it, the Assembly wasn't going to take the vote, piss off WMC, and so ultimately the legislation died. I would say I think we have a lot of momentum coming into the next legislative session, but I think also, Devon, this will be a major election year issue. It'll be brought up by a lot of candidates running for legislature, governor, things like that. And stuff you should bring up when you go to candidates' forums and say, what's the deal? Why are taxpayers on the hook trying to provide tax breaks to Walmart and Walgreens?
What brought about this? Because it seems like within the last year or so, this has become a real issue. What brought about stores saying, you know what, why don't we challenge this?
Well, I think it's because we kept losing court cases. People kept assessing, challenging assessments. They keep going to court. Courts rule against local governments. And so we have to, you know, we've got to raise taxes elsewhere, come with new money.
So this was really just a here or there, and then people started to catch on.
I think the door was open in a Walgreens case 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It kind of opened the door for this practice. And now it seems like in the past 10 years, big box retailers are using this because they can. They can sue localities to get their assessment. They can definitely afford it, where counties much harder, and they figure it's a good investment, especially if they win.
Okay. Great.
I think Mark is going to. Mark, go ahead.
Here's what I know. Sitting on the Board of Review in my hometown, somebody comes in to challenge their assessment, and they're using all of these vacant homes as their comparables.
Sure.
It's not allowed. Absolutely is not allowed. It's not allowed from the state level. It's not allowed from the local level. You've got to have an arm's length reach deal to compare to. I don't understand why it's not the same way for everything in the state. Just that alone. You know, we got rid of the personal property tax, and I do know a company that just got hit with a $300,000 increase in their building. It had never gone up $300,000. Well, they don't have to pay personal property tax, but doggone it, the real estate tax has just jumped up, and commercial is done by the state.
Right.
So they have got to get this figured out. It is going to be an issue, and I think the ones who are not supporting it or won't talk about it won't get the votes.
It could be the case. It's definitely a big issue, and election's coming, so as you go to candidate forums, things like that, I would encourage you to bring it up, you know, talk to people. And say this is important to us, and find out their position on it. You know, smoke them out, I guess.
We had a major company spend $33 million on a facility that they purchased and upgraded, and was fighting their increased assessment.
Yeah, well, I believe it.
Excuse me?
Crazy.
And it was nowhere near $33 million that you paid for it. So it makes no sense at all. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I think you're right. It's about 10 years ago. The economy was slumping. They were closing stores. Walgreens is famous for building a store, selling it for a massive profit, and leasing it back. So they don't really own a lot of their stores. So they can walk away when they're leasing stuff. It's not a big deal.
And nothing against these various entities.
Right.
I shop at Walgreens, great store, no problem. But we want them to be good neighbors. That's all we're saying. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, sometimes you spend more money trying to save a buck. You know, maybe if you're just better neighbors or, you know, work with your local governments, you're in the long run going to be better off. Anyway, obviously I talked about the long-term transportation solution. Going to be a big election year issue. You'll hear from all the candidates that are running about that, what their positions are. Keep an eye on that. Competitive bidding thresholds. So this is for like a public works, not a road, but a public works project. Let's say it's for example, a park shelter. Right now, we'd like to raise the competitive, or lower the threshold where we have to go out to bid. You know, we can use in-house labor, things like that, and avoid having to have a bid. This is something we've been trying to change. We exempted road projects because we don't want the opposition from the road builders. Okay, but there may be cases where on small projects where it just makes sense to not have a bid. You know, obviously you get above a certain number, it's necessary. It's a large project. You got the nursing home that's $3 million. You know, it's gonna have to go out to bid. I get that, but you know, when we're talking $20,000. You know, we'd like to have some flexibility. Protective status for jailers. This is sort of a, I don't know if you remember this. It relates to Act 10. There are a lot of questions because police and fire are exempt from Act 10. What's the status of jailers? Are they considered police? Are they protected? Are they get union protection? Do they get representation? Some counties allow them to have it. Some don't. And so we're sort of trying to work out between the Wisconsin Police Professional Police Association, members of the legislature, itself. We're trying to work out an arrangement and best practice for counties, and we'll see what gets brought forth here in the next session, but haven't been able to come to an agreement or move anything forward on that.
When you say jailers, you're obviously not including state corrections on?
Correct.
So
yeah, it's no.
Separate.
Separate, that's separate. I believe that they have protection.
No, they don't.
They don't? Okay, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. I'm all county, but okay. So what's next? What's coming up? Legislative study committees. Dark stores, there's a so you know how the Ledge Council study committees work?
Yeah.
basically they meet, they study an issue, they recommend legislation. And so the issues they'll be looking at are dark stores, the one we just talked about, guardianship, child placement, the reform of bail, dyslexia, body cameras, of course, it's been a big issue, loans. Maybe some of you heard about some of the alcohol beverage enforcement, what the policy is for beer distribution, beer distributors, direct primary care. Those are some of the issues being looked at. And so we're watching, of course, very closely dark stores, some of these health and human services, child placement, guardianship, bail's a county issue, of course, dyslexia. We do have sheriff's department, so the body cameras will be interesting. I don't know if we're too involved with the alcohol beverage enforcement, direct primary care. All of these are important, so we'll be keeping an eye on them. Keep an eye on the dark stores to see what happens. November general election. So I guess if you're someone who works in the lobby corps in Madison, you've had a couple special elections recently in a Supreme Court race, and I think people were watching those and they sort of see what the tea leaves were, and so. I mentioned Senator Harsdorf, a good friend of Coney's, current Ag Secretary. She had been the Senator in the 10th Senate District, which is up by River Falls, Hudson, Polk County, Burnett County, in the far western part of the state, borders Minnesota. This has been a long-held Republican seat along the Mississippi River, very pretty area to get up there. Senator Harsdorf was extremely popular in her district. She oftentimes won re-election with very large numbers. Last time she was up for re-election was 2016. She won 65% of the vote. Donald Trump won in that district big. Governor Walker had won there big. And so when it was vacated, people thought it was going to stay Republican. They didn't think Democrats would have much of a chance. Democrats had a primary. Republicans had a primary. Adam Jarko was a Republican. State representative, represents the 28th Assembly District, which is one-third of the district. Everyone assumed that Adam was a major front-runner. Patty Schottner was a swing St. Croix County medical examiner. Ran as the Democrat. She won the Democratic primary. People assumed there was no chance for her to win. Republicans, I think they outraised the Democrats in that race, 3-1. Patty Schottner won by 20 or 10 points, double digits. People were shocked. What's going on with the political environment? Is it a fluke? Democrats excited or what? Well, you know, could have been, you know, maybe they went too negative against Patty. I don't know. Then you had the Supreme Court race, nonpartisan officially, but you had Rebecca Dallet running with the support of more Democrats, progressives. You had Michael Skrenak, a Sauk County Circuit Court judge, well-respected guy. People said, well, conservatives make a comeback after the loss in the 10th. Again, low turnout special election. Patty Schottner won by, or sorry, Rebecca Dallet won by more than 10 points. Again, statewide race. And then more recently, you had two special elections, the 42nd Assembly District and the 1st Senate District. The 1st Senate District's up around Green Bay, not in Green Bay, but the area around it, very Republican district. It's been held by a Republican since the 70s, since the Ford administration. Andre Jacques is one of the state representatives, one of the three representing that district. The Democrat was a gentleman by the name of Caleb Frostman. He works in the county family, as he's been the economic development director. That seat flipped to the Democrats by a narrow margin, a much narrower margin, about 4 points to the Democrats. And then the 42nd Assembly District, another seat, leans Republican, north of Madison, Columbia County, Dodge County, Fond du Lac County, rural areas, very Republican seat, long been held by a Republican, that stayed Republican. There was about a 6-point swing to the Democrats that they overperformed, but still not enough for a seat to flip. But it is sort of foretelling what may happen in the fall if the trends continue. So, but regardless of what happens, Governor Walker seeking re-election, I mentioned there's a series of Democrats running. And legislature started out 20 to 13 in favor of the Republicans. They flipped two seats, so it's now 18 to 15. Democrats, if they pick up two more seats, they will take the majority in the Senate. People consider it a toss-up at this point. I guess the pundits consider it a toss-up. Republicans do have a 64 to 35 seat majority in the Assembly. I think it's pretty safe to say Republicans will maintain the majority. It'd be quite a surprise if that flipped. It could, I'm not saying it won't, I just think the likelihood of 15 seats flipping, Democrats would have to get to 50 to take over the majority, it'd be pretty astounding. Possible? Sure, anything can happen, but I think Republicans got the edge. Governor Walker, he himself has acknowledged he's got a very tough race, statewide, Wisconsin's a swing state, sort of right in the middle, And you saw the state Supreme Court race went pretty heavily for the progressive, liberal, Democratic-leaning candidate, so he knows. But Governor Walker's a formidable candidate, running for re-election for the third time. And also he's got experience, so people consider that toss-up, maybe lean Walker. We'll see where it ends up in the fall. Long way to go. Don't even know who the Democratic candidate's going to be. And Governor Walker will have an advantage in terms of experienced staff and resources as well. So that's pretty much it, I think. Okay. Oh, juvenile corrections. How could I forget that issue? any questions on juvenile corrections? I think we talked about it last time I was here. Anyone have any comments on that or questions? And really what we're going through is from a situation where we had Lincoln Hills was sort of the placeholder, the clearinghouse for everybody, and we're going more regionalized. I actually went to a discussion this past spring, it was in April, with some of the northeastern counties up by Green Bay, and what I found out is, I think it's Brown County that has a facility, and all the counties, Door, Manitowoc, Sheboygan, Outagamie, Brown, Marinette, a lot of those northeastern counties are all going to work together to transform the Brown County facility into one that services all those counties. And they had some discussions, there'll be state reimbursement, things like that. It's just the growing pains of changing the system. I know Racine County down here has a facility. Milwaukee's kind of its own animal. There will be reimbursements, but there's growing pains. But I think long-term, in terms of recidivism or situations where people go back into bad situations, one of the preventative ways you can avoid that is to have them close to home, near a support system. And so that's why this idea of regionalization, keeping people as close to the community or to the support system as possible, is something that's been advocated by the governor, by members of the legislature in both parties, by people in the county family. And so there was a task force that worked on that, and you saw a lot about what came out of that. There's been a lot of discussion, and we talked about it last time too. I know there's some apprehension about it, but I think once we get through the growing pains and pull the Band-Aid off quick, you know, and get a system going, people will feel pretty good about what we're doing for the state and the services we're providing. So there's been a series, I don't know if you followed the opioid issue, pretty big issue, and there's a lot of different bills. I think there's almost like 10 different bills related to opioid legislation, some of them providing fiscal remedies to these issues, some of these coming up with best practices on how to proceed, providing assistance, things like that. I think there's almost 10 bills. You know, Representative Nygren, who is co-chair of the Joint Finance, he's a Joint Finance Committee, he's a very powerful legislator, and he had a daughter who had major problems with opioids, and so it's something that he's gotten personally involved in. He's gone all over the country and studied this issue, worked with other legislators, really studied up on it, has gotten bipartisan support for a lot of the efforts he's put forth, and so kudos to him. He's worked with counties, he's worked with your health and human service departments, your law enforcement, to come up with good legislation. Also Sarah and Marcy from our office have been in contact with him as he's put proposals on the table, so that's sort of the story there. And obviously you hear more and more about it. Heroin and opioids and in small towns, rural Wisconsin, and in urban areas, it's a problem. And so we're going to be on the forefront as counties of fighting opioids. And so what else do we got? Is that it?
Yep.
That's it. So okay. Thank you. Do you guys have a county board meeting tonight?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
What time is it?
It's 7:30.
What time are we at now?
Oh, 5:07.
Perfect. You got more?
Oh, yeah, we got quite a bit more. So
now we're wrapping it up.
Yes.
Any questions while I'm here?
Well, we appreciate you coming.
It is always a pleasure to be with you. In Kenosha County is a great place, great city, great county, great people. And so, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. Next one, I guess, is what, number 8?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
2 ordinances.
Ordinances and amendment for MCKC.
We have one by Jeff Gentz and one by the Legislative Committee.
Okay, so what we did is...
I go here.
Probably what we should do is we should talk about both of them at the same time, and maybe then we can come to a consensus on which one to choose, and maybe set up the board. Okay? Should we have some... Chuck?
Yeah, I'll just quickly brief you since I have to leave. The reason I immediately brought this up was because, I mean, we could have kept going at night, just keeping it the way it was, and it was just silly. All of the three candidates were under the impression that the one who got the lowest votes in the beginning would have just bumped out, and it would have been for the last two. So I think that's really the way to do it, to move it along, and you know, there's no sense playing little games and that type of thing. So whoever the two out of three for any seat, they should move on to the final, no matter how many there are, to get to the 11. I briefly looked at the other one that was on there and said, well, we have to keep going until we get a majority. And I didn't really understand that because it's already written in there that we need 11, we need the majority, so...
I believe what it was in the other one, it's just in case if there is more than three candidates. So let's say there are four of them.
Okay.
That would be the lowest one will go out, and then the top three will go on the next one. In every round, the lowest one will go out, instead of doing everything at one time.
Okay, well, so I would support just the final two. I mean, we've never barely had three, let alone four. So, I mean, my thought process was just cut it down to the final two who have the most. If you've got four, that's a cluster mess. But, I mean, three's bad enough. Mm-hmm. But I just think the lowest lowest should bow out of that and then move on. I mean, in the case that we had, I would have been the lowest, and I'm fine with that. The thing is, I mean, just to keep going and going and going, we could have been at that all night and just created more animosity and more issues. So to me, it's just a simplified thing to make it the top two. If there's five people that want it, make it the top two. I mean, obviously it's written in our rule that you have to have a majority of the 12, or, you know, so you have to have the majority. So just get it down to two and then you'll get a majority, you know, because they'll all vote for one or the other. So to me, that was just a simple fix. I don't have a horse in that. I mean, it doesn't matter to me what you do. It just seems to me to simplify it, that's certainly a way to go. That's the only reason I brought it up. I don't need to go back and have it. I just didn't understand, you know, three, four, five candidates. Just make it the top two. They move on. I'm sure all three of us agreed on that before. So, I mean, I'm sure that it's fine. It wasted an hour of our time. Well, we can't get back.
We agreed, but then somebody changed it in the last minute. So.
Well,
but
yeah,
anyway,
that's a difference. I had that too. I had about four people for it. So. But anyway.
No, I mean of the three.
I have to go. I have another meeting. But thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, Mark?
In the first example, as Supervisor Gens brought up, if there was a tie, if you had four, if there was a tie for the bottom two, did the bottom two drop out? In the other example, it doesn't say so, but in the first example, that would take care of it if just the top two. So it doesn't matter how many are after that. And two, I think Supervisor Rodriguez's point last time was, well, do we really need to do anything except for maybe call for it if there is going to be a vote of three or more to then call for what we want to do at that point in time, because it is so rare that something like this does happen, apparently, because this is the first time. Kind of leaning towards that route, if we really need to do anything, if, again, I defer to counsel on this, when would you know when to defer to a different way of doing it? When you know you have more than two candidates, or sometime after the vote?
I think we would have to set the rules before the vote starts. So, I mean, if we went into the meeting anticipating that there was going to be more than two candidates, my suggestion would be that somebody should move to suspend the rules, which would really be making a rule for that set of elections, to say we're going to only take the top two or whatever the decision is.
So basically, what we're talking about now is we could do that now, which would automatically set that rule. That this is the route we're going to take each and every time.
Yes.
Because you could have now a discussion on which way you want to do it from a bunch of different board members, correct?
Potentially, yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
I see where Supervisor Norgan is coming from this, but like I said at our last committee meeting, I think this is very reactive to a problem that we've seen one time as a county, at least to our knowledge. So I mean, I really don't think that Supervisor Gentz is the one that he had drafted, the one that we had drafted as a committee. I don't think either of them are really warranted.
I think the language of the top two should move on is better than just the one, the lowest one, because top two covers several different scenarios. It covers the if there were four, the bottom two tying, also the bottom two not tying. It just happened to be the lowest. Whereas just eliminating the one, the lowest, if you had four, you'd have to go three rounds, whereas the other one, the top two, you could do it in two rounds. Whether it was a tie, if there were four, or whether just you had two of the lowest. So it seems to me if we're going to make a call on this, the language, the top two should move on. You can settle the vote for the vice chair in the second round as opposed to waiting a third round to eliminate one, and then you have three, and then you have to go another round, and then you eliminate, right? You have to go to a third round.
Anybody else, or anybody wants to make a motion on which one to use?
I just want to, if my thought was, because Supervisor Norgan brought up a tie, what happens if there's a tie? You might want to add wording about that. Mm-hmm. Never know.
Well, if we go.
If it passes, I'm just saying.
Okay, if he goes with the first one, I suppose is, if there's a tie, just
that's
the top two will. But the top
well,
two will.
Let's say there's three. The three. The first one gets. Now I can
right.
do math
right.
and apply.
7, 6, and 6.
The other two could
seven,
still
six
tie.
And six?
Yeah.
Let's say it's 7, 6, and 6, then what happens?
7, 6, and 6 is probably not going to happen because that's only 19.
Right, but then the fourth one gets 2, or the remaining 4.
Oh, 7.
Oh, yeah, you mean the second and third.
Right.
The
so you pick the top two, and you're actually taking the top three, though.
Yeah, if it's 3, then.
That's just stuck in my head. That's
yeah, second and third.
That's where you're going, right?
Yes.
In the event that occurs, then I think Corporation Council has made it clear to us that we could, in the event, have a motion to suspend the rules and figure out another way to deal with it.
No, what I tried to say, maybe I didn't say very clearly, but I think we have to set the rules for the election before we get started. There's a common joke in our office that we were told there would be no math. I'd have to figure out whether, maybe someone got through. I'd have to see whether mathematically it would actually be possible to have a situation where you had somebody
11, 6,
sure
and
you
6.
Could. Yeah.
11, 6, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was not something that occurred to me when Supervisor Gentz asked me to draft this. He had very simple language he wanted. That's what I drafted. Mm-hmm. It does say the candidates who receive the first and second most votes shall proceed to the second ballot. So either we have a situation where everyone continues to move on, or it doesn't actually address the problem that's being put forward. I don't know what the solution is. I will say, and I don't want to overstep my bounds, this is not an issue we really need to settle tonight. It's something that could, you can send it back to me. I can try and figure out if there's a better approach to it with whatever instructions you want. We can bring it back in July. I personally think it's probably more important to move to the other two items that are actually on the board agenda tonight than this one.
I agree with council. I think these are kind of moot points, and like I said a month ago, I think this is being, you know, legislating retroactively to a problem that we don't often see.
I was going to make a motion to table it, send it back to Corp Council, and we will work on it in July.
Second.
Okay.
There's a motion on the table it, and to send it back to Corporation Council. Any discussions?
I'm in agreement with that. Can we rope into that maybe? I'm curious what some of the other counties do about this particular little mechanism I've not investigated. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I support that, tabling it as well. So the issue then is if there's three, how would you revise the language if the bottom two were top?
Well, if
right?
we table, that's not what it would just table, and then no, we'll worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think it's just
we'll have
it with some instructions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
you
got
a new
math.
No, there is not that I say it's because of the timing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to vote on the motion to table it and send it back to Corporation Council. We're going to take a vote on that. We're going to start with the governance. Are you voting?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Everybody else?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nay.
Yeah, I have it. Okay, next one. Number nine, resolution to place an advisor referendum on the November 2018 ballot and addressing the Dark Star roll call.
I approve very much of doing this, but already the city of Kenosha and Summers have already announced their own referendums, and ours is the only one that was worked out by the Counties Association, the League of Municipalities, of what they wanted on the ballot. So what I would like us to do is you and the chairman send a letter to Summers, send a letter to the city going, this is why we think there should be one, because I checked this out, is right now, in Summers, that if we put this on the ballot, there'd be two referendums on dark stores, same with the city, if we put it on there. So that's why I think we should try to talk to them and say, one dark stores referendum for the whole county.
I agree with Supervisor Frederick. I would wonder if Corporation Council should be involved in those discussions just to make sure everything's clear.
That's
yeah.
I certainly could. I mean, I've spoken very briefly with Clerk Vicki. I think she's already reached out to Summers a little bit, explained amongst other things that there is a financial cost if you have an item on the ballot that exclusively applies to your municipality. I certainly think that should the board approve this tonight, we can speak with the municipalities and see what.
Is it just like a memo of understanding between us and them, or do they literally have to reconvene and like rescind their decision?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
From discussion, I've heard they have to rescind.
They would reconvene. And then,
We should vote on this tonight, hours, and
yes.
Then get with them and
yes.
See
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a question. Was this referendum based on the one from the cities or Summers? Because I know there's two different ones.
Both of them made their own.
It's
yeah.
a complete different one.
This is completely different.
Yeah.
The city and Summers made theirs up completely separate from any discussion with any otherwise themselves.
Yeah, because the reason I ask is because the cities is very long and complicated, and it's a lot more, and sometimes less is better,
right.
Less is more, and it's better to go off of the one that is the most.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is there a motion?
I moved past the... Sorry, I shut my computer down. It was what's the name of this?
Advisory referendum.
Advisory referendum. Thank you.
November 18th ballot. Mm-hmm. Second.
Okay, moved and second. Any discussion?
I just have a question.
Aaron?
I'd like to know why numbers 9 and 10 are on the agenda tonight and then also on the county board agenda when there's a rule against it, unless it's time sensitive, which, in my opinion, these are not time sensitive.
In order for it to be included in the convention, the one at least has to send it to them to be a part of the convention discussion in the backup. It had to be passed tonight to the 17th of July, which our next meeting is. It would be too late to include them now. So
okay, that's one.
Mm-hmm.
The other one?
As far as the referendum goes, there were concerns, one, because of the other municipalities and needing to talk with them about how we're proceeding. There's also a deadline for making sure that we have everything set for the November ballot. And we wanted to make sure that we had enough time to complete those
okay,
discussions.
Passed that rule, and this has happened several times that things have come up and gone on the agenda right after the meeting, and then you guys, the committee has to rush to get things done to make sure instead of discussing them. They're more concerned about getting it voted instead of discussing so it goes on to the county board agenda, or that it's passed, and so it can't go to the county board agenda, and that's why we passed that rule last year. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there would be something to bring up upstairs. They're the ones that put it there.
Well, I spoke to Sarah from there last week, and she goes, if we wait until the 17th, we can't include this in there in the convention packet, along with what's going to be brought up to the legislature next year. That's the reason for the rush on the month, was just time-wise, because we're not meeting on the 3rd of January. 3rd of July.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, want to vote on that? Let's start with the government. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Number 10, resolution calling the legislature for the expert loophole.
Mm-hmm.
This one was brought up by the minister.
Esposito.
Okay. Is there any discussions on that?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Hold on. Okay. Made the motion?
Zach
made the motion. Second by any discussions on that?
Yes.
I believe it. Okay.
I had issues with this resolution when I discussed it with Supervisor Grady, and he said that my issues would be discussed and could be changed at the committee level. I'm trying to bring it up, so give me 1 second. My issues were because I contacted Representative Kirkman and asked her the process and what's going on in the state right now. And according to Representative Kirkman, if my memory serves me correctly, and we put this in here, give me 1 second. That the state has created a committee or a
legislative study committee.
Yes, a legislative council study committee on it to study it. And I asked her the timeline of when it was going to start. And she said the committee was not going to start until July. And that the committee actually takes approximately 3 to 4 months to study it. They'll have hearings or meetings and call people in and things like that. So if it starts in July and it takes 3 to 4 months, that's July, August, September. And then she said after that, then they come up, they will take all the information they gathered and they will actually propose or write legislation to help the legislators and come up with legislation based on the information that they studied. So we're talking September before this committee is even done. And we're telling them to go into special session when legislation isn't even written yet. That was my issue. That we're kind of jumping the gun by saying September 2018, we want them to go into special session when we know that that is the earliest that this committee would even get done. And there's no way that legislation would even be written by that time. So that was my concern that I brought up with Supervisor Grady, and he said it could be discussed at the legislative
meeting. Okay. I'm aware of the legislative study committee process. The one that they have, I know, is looking at property tax administration pretty much overall, a couple of different angles. This is one, I think, since there's already been conversation and some study and some movement on fixing this, I don't see any reason to delay. I know the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the House made it very clear back in February that they wanted to do something around the issue of property taxes. I presume this legislative study committee is probably his brainchild of his baby to try to make that happen. But this one item, I mean, I think this has been discussed, this has been worked. I see no reason why this can't be taken care of. It's low-hanging fruit. Doesn't have to necessarily be held up by all of the investigations into the other areas of property tax law that the legislature may or may not want to change. A legislative study committee recommendation typically results in a bill, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the bill's actually going to get action. So,
not to be flipped, what is there to study? This thing was brought up last summer.
I suppose
that low-hanging fruit is an understatement.
I did talk to a couple of them also, but because they did not go through the last time. Now they formed the committee, which the committee was just formed, I believe. And they're going to go through that, and those are their procedures that they're doing it. And
mm-hmm.
They might start going over it.
There's already two bills, Senate Bill 291 and Senate Bill 292, that are already written on the dark stores.
Those bills will not be taken up
until the next session.
Are they going to be reintroduced? Is that what you're saying?
But did they have the study done before that?
I don't know.
They would go out of, I'm not sure if they would go out of session at the end of the year or if they would go out of session at the end of the term. That's the one.
My understanding is they're going to go in the next session in January, whatever that, you know, in January. That is my understanding.
My question is, are the unintended consequences if we pass it now affect anything that goes on at the state level, or is there a potential that we miss something that we should have put in this, or is it just a matter of us getting it done early and then it sits until it gets picked up by the state? I'm not sure of the process.
You're pretty much on the mark on that.
Why was September picked as the date, just out of curiosity?
Supervisor Grady wanted it like in August, and I said, there's no way they're going to go into special session in August. The legislative study committee will not even be done. And so he said, okay, how about September? And I said, I think that's still too early. And he said, well, we can discuss it in the committee.
So is there a time frame that we should be trying to hit, I guess, is what I'm asking.
October.
No.
Mm-hmm. If it's just simply striking September and replacing it with
October. In my opinion, I would just change that to say, like, remove the special session, because I don't think they're going to do it, and say, request that they take it up right away in January.
Because this will not go in front of WCA until the 22nd of September, is when this would be included in their...
In the conference?
In the conference, yeah.
Is that what we're trying to do with this?
Yeah, to include it in their packet.
That's what I thought.
I wasn't aware of that.
It said WCA.
It brought it up.
September date is chosen.
It said WCA, so I figured this would go into the, be part of that.
No, I think it's just so the WCA can see that we.
Because they were looking for,
I thought
to reaffirm.
Supervisor Grady never mentioned that to me.
Legislative Council Study Committees right now are dark stores. Mm-hmm. WCA is working.
I thought we sent one already. Didn't we already
do
a dark store
last year?
Maybe it's a material to do it one now.
So why don't we just change that second to last thing from the bottom and just have it state that they should address it first thing in January?
Which is... Where are we now? Which one is
September. No later than January 2019.
Well, just since they should address it right away at the start of the new session in January.
Mm-hmm. At the legislative session beginning in January of 2019.
Yeah.
As opposed to a special session.
Because what happens if they have this study. Who's on the study? Other legislators?
That is a bunch of legislators.
So what happens if seats are lost and replaced and whatnot with new legislators? Is that going to have an impact at that point?
No, they should. The committee will be done
before the term is over.
She said 3 to 4 months. They're starting in July. So 3 months is July, August, September. You say four, then October sometime. And then after they do the study, that's when they work on the legislation, and then it should be ready come January.
Okay, so rather than calling out a special session, let it progress through it. How they're probably going to do it anyway.
A special session, which they might not even, it probably won't even.
A special session that goes to an election.
Well, yeah, never happened. So it's not even worth to do that.
Well, I move that we just say let it be brought up in January 2019 in regular session.
Okay. That would be to amend the resolution.
That would be an amendment resolution.
Are we okay if we second that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion by Supervisor Frank, second by Mark. To change
the resolution to say that it will be brought up in the next regular session in January 2019, something to that effect.
Okay, so it will be to address this issue in January?
Next legislative session, January 2019. Corp Council.
Who seconded?
Mark.
I wouldn't assume that.
Okay, so there's a motion.
There's a motion, but there's no language, so that's what I'm trying to do.
Right.
Also, again, with the risk of overstepping our bounds, I'm going to do that. Probably also, it would be my suggestion, strike the be a further resolved clause above that, since that's the one that asks the committee to act on it before they're going to be formed. I mean, if we're trying to clean it up, we might as well also take out the language about July 2018.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's going to happen anyway. They're in the process of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the motions on the floor, meet everybody's purposes and expectations? It says, be it further resolved that the legislature be requested to address this issue in the session beginning January 2019.
You're good with that, Chuck?
I'm good with that.
I'm good with that.
And then that's striking then the part about July this year and September of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because that'll be a subsequent thing, right?
That's currently not part of the amendment.
Okay, so the one of
the amendment, but it can be made part of the amendment.
That,
we can amend the amendment.
that line still, about the Legislative Council Study Committee, that still makes sense in it.
Okay, all right.
Because we're asking them to make sure that they take it up in no later than July.
That fits our time.
Right.
Okay.
Don't push it off till September.
Okay. So
the language, and I will provide this to the clerk,
Would
be a further resolved that the legislature be requested to address this issue in the session beginning January 29th.
Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussions on that?
On the tab, I've got Senate Bill 292 up with the language and the analysis by the Reference Bureau. On another tab, I've got the 2018 Legislative Council Study Committee on Property Tax Assessment Practices and a list of its members. I don't know. I just see no reason to wait. I mean, who knows what will happen economically between now and then and the further implications of that. So on those grounds, waiting makes me nervous.
Anybody else? Okay. So we're going to vote on the amendment first. Okay. Okay. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay.
Aye.
Got
it. It's one nay. Okay, now, going back to the ordinance itself. Any discussions on that with the amendment?
I so move we approve as amended.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Governor. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Okay, now, what's next?
Other matters.
Other matters?
Other matters.
Anybody, anything? Motion for adjourn, anyone?
So moved.
Second.
Motion for adjourn, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.